Hello and welcome back to Franklin Covey's twice weekly podcast on leadership with Scott Miller. I'm your host each week, 6 years, 350 plus episodes, where every week, twice weekly, on Tuesdays and Fridays, we shine what is Franklin Covey's mega watt spotlight onto different thought leaders from all different walks of life, generally themed around how to be a better leader, how to be a more effective individual. And some weeks we interview Hollywood celebrities, world-renowned athletes, people that have set world records, researchers, business titans, best-selling authors, people who may not be a household name, but have done something Herculean or survived something tragic or traumatic and have shown the courage and vulnerability to come on and teach the lessons through their own journey. Franklin Covey, of course, the most trusted leadership firm in the world, co-founded by Stephen Covey, the author of the seminal book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. This book has sold more than 50 million copies. Hundreds of millions of professionals and leaders have attended a multi-day 7 Habits work session. We are 40 years in business, all with the common mission to help make you better at whatever it is you're trying to accomplish. Today, our guest is Mike Posner. You know him as a poet, an author. He is a musician, a songwriter, a performer. And today we're going to talk about all the different facets of his journey that I think you will find fascinating. Mike Posner, welcome to On Leadership.
Thank you, Scott. Great to connect with you.
Mike, off camera, I mentioned to you that last night my sons were super impressed that I was interviewing you, like Matthew McConaughey, whatever, Deepak Chopra, I don't care. Mike Posner, are you kidding me? My kids have your son. Woo! And I mentioned that you look exactly like you do in your videos. For those last few people under a rock that may not know who you are, I'm going to remind them. You are well known as a record producer, writer, vocalist. You are probably best known for your own videos and songs that are in my head on perpetual loop, including I Took a Pill in Ibiza from your album 31 Minutes to Take Off. Your song Please Don't Go is on loop in my head. You co-produced Sugar by Maroon 5. Love that music video. You have written songs for Justin Bieber, for Lambreth, Pharrell Williams, Big Sean, 2 Chainz, Wiz Khalifa, Nelly, T.I., Snoop Dogg, Nick Jonas, Avicii, Iggy Azalea, Ollie Murs. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. What I want you to do is I don't want you to show any humility. I would like you to take a couple of minutes and rewind a few decades. Reintroduce yourself, how you got into the business, why you've had such impact on people. We're going to talk about the walk across America. We're going to discuss the snake bite, all things Mike Posner, the next 40 minutes. Reintroduce yourself to our audience.
Hi, my name is Mike, and I'm an artist with a capital A. I didn't get into music. Music got into me since before I can remember. My mother tells me stories of me being a little kid, 2 years old, and hearing the birds chirp in the backyard in Detroit, where I'm from, and me trying to sing the notes back to the birds. So I think this whole music thing was very much nature, not nurture. Came with my incarnation this time around. And I just have always been fascinated with these melodies that show up in my head. I believe in God. I think they come from God or higher power. And I try to just translate the things I hear in my head into recordings. And so I started doing that when I was about 8 years old. I'm 36 years old now. I've been called everything from a genius to the next Justin Timberlake to, you know, a one-hit wonder to some other four-letter words that I won't repeat here. You know, I've had amazing highs in my career and even lower lows. And I've just tried to tell the truth the entire way. You know, what's special about my journey to me is, you know, at age 22, Scott, I was given everything that I thought would make me happy. I found myself richer than my parents, I found myself getting attention from the opposite sex in amounts that I never dreamed of. I found myself famous, and I didn't feel happy. And the next 10, 15 years of my life, the chapter that's most exciting for me to talk about is, you know, me going on a journey, a spiritual journey, to understand, okay, if those things don't change my moment to moment experience of life, they don't create fulfillment, if they don't connect me to my purpose, then what does? And so I've been on quite a ride since then. And you mentioned the walk across America, you mentioned climbing Everest, and I found myself in wild retreat scenarios and just stumbled on some tools and answers. And, you know, my intention and my purpose for being here today is just to share what I've learned, and hopefully it can help someone else on their path. My father, before he passed away, he said, you know, just be healthy and happy. And so my mission is just to help people be healthier and happier. So I hope we can do that here today, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Mike, I'm looking forward to digging into really who you are and what you've learned. You are a record producer. You are a songwriter. You are a singer, a poet, an author. A few months ago, I had the privilege of having breakfast with Marcus Buckingham. Most people know him as the former Gallup researcher that really galvanized the strengths movement. He wrote the books First Break All the Rules and Now Discover Your Strengths. He became the Strengths Finder, probably the most ubiquitous assessment most organizations use to help people identify their strengths. When people think of the strengths movement, they think of Marcus Buckingham. And Marcus said something profound over breakfast. He said, in his experience, he finds that most people follow what they're good at for their careers, not what they love, what makes them happy. That because you are good at something doesn't necessarily mean that should be your career or your identity or your passion. Is there a particular one of the things that you're good at, but it's not your passion? Or is your passion also what you're good at? And what would you say about that combination?
You know, I'm not sure if I totally agree with him. Cal Newport would disagree with him. He says, you know, when you get really good at something, you start to like it more. And I'll just use that as a tangential point. You know, one thing I've discovered is that most of us undersell ourselves in our capacity, our potential to become experts at something. And I see, hear, feel, and know from my own experience that, you know, I can do pretty much anything. I could become an expert at anything. I'm not saying it's easy to do so. It's a lot of hard work and dedication and discipline that goes into becoming great at something, but that opportunity to do so is there. And so for me, I have an insane amount of self-will and discipline. And if I point myself in a direction, I go really far in that direction. So for me, it's more of an issue of making sure I'm pointed in the right direction. You know, I find myself up at a place in life now where there's like probably there's just more things that I'm inspired by than I could probably do. I probably have two lifetimes worth of ideas, you know, things I want to do. So it's just for me that's a question of faith and, you know, the ability to connect to one's own heart to prioritize and go, okay, what can I do that no one else can? How can I serve the most and the deepest? And that's what I'm going to dedicate myself to.
Mike, I asked that question, by the way, thank you for your answer, because you're obviously a multifaceted, talented, passionate artist. You've had significant success and fame on some of these singles and albums that you've produced. I mean, 9 years ago, I took a pill in Ibiza, was top 10 in 27 countries, right? I mean, I can't get it out of my head.
You could also take a bill to Ibiza.
I guess you could take a bill to Ibiza and hope the legislature passes it. I'm sure I'm not the first person who's gotten that backwards. But you also are very successful in helping other people become successful, right? I mean, I don't know what your role is in dozens of these artists that you have also contributed to. I'm guessing you found your voice in helping other people and not always being in the spotlight. When do you decide you're going to be like behind the scenes versus out front, metaphorically on stage, literally on stage?
I'm just a creative guy. You know, it's not a as deep a answer as maybe you might expect. And really, I just traditionally write a lot of songs. And I write more than I can put out myself. Sort of the one of the banes of my existence and stones I grind against the music industry is like I often write songs faster than I could put them out. Or sometimes I just write songs and I'm creating an album and the songs don't fit on the album. So then I'll say, hey, who else could sing this thing? And I've been very blessed to work with some of the best artists in the world and have them sing some of the words and melodies I've written. It's pretty cool.
So
Mike, part of their journey.
Mike, tell us how that works, because I know the audience will be interested. So you write a song, and for whatever reason, you decide it's not the song you want to sing. You've written it, but you want Pharrell to sing it, or you want Wiz Khalifa, or whoever it is. Like, do you text them and say, I've written a song and you're my guy? Or how do you decide, and who does decide, who brings your song to life for the world?
I decide. You know, they're my songs. So, yeah, that's the best way, is if you have a personal relationship, you just send it to them. There's also a whole backwards, archaic infrastructure,
right,
of managers, A&Rs, and agents in L.A. that you know, supposedly can get your music to someone else to sing it. And, you know, sometimes that works, but most often it's easier to just send it to them, for sure.
And do you have a name in mind? Like, you write a song and you think, no, this is Nelly. Like, only Nelly, no one else. And if Nelly doesn't sing it, this song's never being published.
No, I don't. I'm just writing. I'm just creating what I think is beautiful. And if there are any artists out here listening, I'm sure there are, artists of any medium, you know, if you're a writer, painter, whatever. I can't tell you how many times I've given this advice to people. And I didn't make it up. It's from Maria Popola. But your job is just to create the art that you want to exist. You know, if you're creating art, then chances are you're a fan of that kind of art. And so you have this beautiful opportunity to put something into the world that you love. You're not putting something into the world that you think your friend will love, or your mom, or your manager, or your fans. No. You're just creating something that you want to exist. And you're the only one that can do that job. And that's it. So when I'm writing, I'm just creating something I think is beautiful, something I'm proud of. And, you know, if someone else singing it, or that's way later. But I don't bring that into the studio. I don't bring anyone else into the studio in my head. It's just me and the place that the ideas come from.
Mike, would you share with us kind of what is your creative process? Like, what do you do to nurture and feed your creativity that other people might actually find interesting or inspiring, whether they do the same thing or it inspires them some other place? Do you have any rituals or practices or habits or things that help get you in the space you need to be to unleash your art in many different forms?
Yeah, you know, I have a lot of them. One is,
I'm guessing one was a pill and Ibiza, I'm guessing, right?
No, quite the contrary. I mean, I wrote a song about doing that, but I wasn't having ideas while I was doing that. So I would say no. First, I would start with, you know, take ideas seriously. You know, to this day, my girlfriend could tell you, if I have an idea at 3 a.m. and I'm half asleep, it's kind of annoying, but I got to get up and I record it into my phone. You know, and so when those ideas come, you got to take them seriously. Another is, especially with music can be very collaborative. It also can be very solitary. You know, I can write songs alone, or I can write them with others. And these are powerful tools to play off one another. So If I'm writing alone and I feel sort of stuck, well, I'll go work with someone else because that'll bring something else out of me. Conversely, if I've been working with a lot of other people and I'm kind of sick of like having to bounce my idea off of somebody else and I just want to say the thing I want to say, well, then I'll stop working with other people and go work with myself. So those two can be played off one another to keep creativity flowing. When one starts to feel dry, bring out the other one. And when that one starts to feel dry, you know, go back to working by yourself. Furthermore, you know, I believe like a person's values are not reflected by their words. A person's values are reflected by their calendar. It doesn't really matter if you say you take creativity or writing seriously. Those are just words. What matters is if you actually schedule time to do it. And so I would say if you think that you want to take creation seriously, well, there should actually be time in your calendar to do that every day. For me, I like the morning. There's nothing better than when 9 a.m. rolls around and I've already been up since 5 and I already finished a song or already wrote a chapter in my book or, you know, it's really fulfilling. And to go into the Zoom calls like that. So I like that time. You know, other people like that time at night. I also meditate twice a day. You know, when you have a clear mind, there's space for inspiration to come in. When you have a full mind, there's no space. So any practice that clears the mind is good for creativity. I also use the ice bath. I also use exercise every day. You know, all these things are productive and beneficial, and you know, you just want to keep that channel clear. The other thing is, and this is the last thing I'll add, is you know, creativity is you have to keep going back. So there's a tendency after you write something great by your own definition, something you're proud of, there's a tendency to kind of want to sit back. But really you should go back again you should immediately as quick as you can. Go create more. Go write more. Don't rest on what you wrote yesterday. Just keep building on that momentum. And it should be a daily thing. A daily thing. There should be time for creation.
Mike, did you always know this would be your path? Like, did you ever think you were going to be a chemical engineer or a barber or a commercial airline pilot? Did you know early in life that this would be your path of success?
Very early on, I wrote in a journal. This was maybe like 8 years old. And my teacher said, you know, what is something, if you accomplished it, you would know that your life had really worked out. And at that 8 years old, I wrote down, I want to be interviewed by Scott. That was it. My life has turned out exactly how I planned it, man. This is it.
The worlds have aligned to support Mike Posner.
I'm teasing you. But in all actuality, my friend, my real life has exceeded my dreams. And that's something, you know, I'm like a skinny Jewish kid from Detroit to sell millions of records, to be nominated for Grammys, and then go, you know what I'm going to do next? I'm going to walk across the continent and not say it, do it. And then go, you know, I'm not done. Now I'm going to climb the tallest mountain in the world and not talk about it, do it. This wasn't even on the menu of my wildest dreams. And these are not dreams. There's something more valuable than dreams. They're memories. And so, you know, I have a fulfillment, a pride that is worth more than any trophy or any award, knowing that I have like, I have, you know, like a dish rag, you know, you squeeze it out. It's like, that's what I do with my, whatever talent I was given, which isn't that much. I'm like wringing that thing out, dude. So I, you know, it's been an incredible journey, and I'm beyond blessed. I've come close to death a few times, and I'm here, you know, for a reason. and that's to help others on their journey. But yeah, my real life is bigger than my dreams ever were.
What a great metaphor, wringing life dry like a wet rag. I love the inspiration you gave us. Okay, so let's talk about this walk across America. As I remember this story, you were somewhere overhearing someone talk about someone else who had done this, and you're thinking, yeah, I think I'll do that. I'm sure I have that wrong. But will you kind of just take 5 minutes and tell us the why and the what and the how? We'll get to the snake. Save that for me. But let's talk about, I don't know why, in your byline it's going to say, hundreds of millions of records, wildly successful, rang it dry like a dishcloth, climbed Everest, walked across America, and survived a snake bite. I don't know why, but that's going to be in your epitaph forever. Hold that for a moment. Talk about the inspiration, what you did, and perhaps more importantly, what the hell, man, why? Why did you walk across America?
Yeah, I walked across America because of pain. You know, I want to be really honest about that. I was stagnating in my life. I found myself looking in the mirror and questioning everything, questioning, is this it? You know, there's got to be more to life than this. And I have everything that was supposed to make me happy, but there's just no compelling reason to get out of bed in the morning. I mean, the juice was all gone. My father died. My friend Avicii killed himself. My friend Mac Miller overdosed and died. My friend Ronnie had a heart attack and died. And I'm looking in the mirror and I'm saying, if all those guys are dead, well, that means I'm going to die one day too. Hopefully not soon, but this is a return trip. And maybe before I die, I should actually try to live. Not the life that my agent and manager tells me I have to live. The life that I was meant to live. Maybe I should try to do that. Maybe I should give myself a compelling reason to get out of bed in the morning. Maybe I should put something in my future that enlivens my present. Because when the future is empty, the present's unbearable. And so this idea, yeah, I heard about someone talking about it 5 years before I'm looking in this mirror. Having an idea was an unimportant moment. No one cares about your ideas. You know, no one cares about the thing you say you're going to do someday. You don't even care. The important moment is when you say, the time is now. It's enough. And it was not some like funny thing that I was doing for press. It wasn't some funny like bucket list, like woohoo thing. No, this was, I'm going to walk across America or I'm going to die. And I'm not going to die the way my dad or Avicii or Ronnie or Mac Miller died. I'm gonna die a way sadder death if I don't do this. I will die the kind of death where my body's still walking around, spewing hot air, but my dreams have decayed into a corpse. And you don't have to look very far to meet one of those kind of people. It's a way sadder death. And so I knew it was a crazy idea. I've since learned that, you know, not all crazy ideas are great, but all great ideas are crazy. And so I made the decision to go. You know, I needed to change my, no one was coming to help me. It wasn't anyone else's fault. You know, I had to change my own life. And I knew that there was more for me. I didn't know what it was, but I knew I had to escape whatever sandbox I was playing inside of in West Hollywood, you know, with a life designed solely around becoming more famous and getting other people to like me. And so on April 15th, 2019, I stood off the coast of New Jersey. I was in the Atlantic Ocean. I was scared. I was scared because people told me I was ruining my career. I was scared that I was going to cause irreparable damage to my body. I was scared that I was going to fail. I didn't know if I could actually complete this mission. And I would look like an idiot in front of everyone. But I stood off the coast and I took a step. Step one is take one step. And when I took that step, all those fears about what might happen if I did this, they disappeared because I was doing it. You know, I walked across New Jersey. I walked across Pennsylvania. I walked across Ohio. I walked across Indiana, Illinois, walked across Missouri during a heat wave. My feet started to hurt horribly. You know, like I could barely stand up in the morning, but I kept going. and I walked across Kansas. I walked into Colorado. I could just see the Rocky Mountains on the horizon. And ow, pain shot up my left leg. And then I heard the sound. That was the snake that bit me in my left leg.
So talk about this, because this just wasn't a snake bite. This was a pretty significant interruption in not just the walk, but your life. You make it 65% of the way across the nation. By the way, by the time you got to Colorado, you've been doing this for how many months from New Jersey?
Yeah, I would be estimating. I can't recall. I remember the mile marker I was at was 1,797. So probably 4 months.
Yeah, at least. And I mean, not to mention all the people you met and the instances and I'm sure the life or death scenarios and the body, the toll it took. Okay, so you're walking across Colorado. You're 65 or so percent the way to your destination or more, 70-something percent. What happens next? A rattlesnake bites you.
Yeah, what happens next is I start to lose awareness. What happens next is
Mike, stop a second. Sorry, you're alone. You're like on where are you in Colorado? Are there people with you? Are there cars? Like what's the situation?
My walk manager Colin was there, and before this event, I posted on social media and I said if you find me, you can walk with me. And people came from all over the United States to walk with me. So that day there were two people there walking with me. We were between La Junta and Walsenburg in Colorado, which is eastern Colorado on Colorado 10. It's the middle of nowhere. And I started to lose awareness. I would come to kind of wake up and realize, you know, this is really serious. This isn't a bee sting. And called 911. I spoke to dispatch. She said, I sent two ambulances, one from each direction, one from the east, one from the west, and a chopper. She said, whatever gets there first, get in. I said, am I going to die? She said, I don't know, sir. I spent 5 nights in the hospital. My leg swelled to the size of an elephant trunk. I went from walking 24 miles a day to not being able to walk to the bathroom. I had to go home to Michigan. Then this funny thing happened while I was resting, and that was I started to get better and I healed. And so now I had this decision to make. I could either return to the sandbox, to my old life, could return to, you know, trying to be more famous and ordering Uber Eats and, you know, just this like fake life that brought me nothing but disillusionment, or I could go back to the side of the road where the cars almost hit me every day. I could go back to the sweltering heat. I could go back to the blistering foot pain. This path sucked. It hurt a lot, but it taught me that when it comes to things I care about, my reasons to quit are always just excuses in disguise. Like I had the best reason to quit of all time. I was bit by a poisonous snake. Almost lost my leg, almost lost my life. And so if I chose to quit now, you know, it wouldn't look like I was quitting. It would just be a cool story with like, honestly, a badass ending. It was such a good reason to quit that most people wouldn't even think I was a quitter, but I wasn't doing it for most people. And I don't know how to explain this to you, but there was no other way for me to become the man that I now am, the man I knew I was supposed to be, than to walk the remaining 1,000 miles. There was no book I could read about it. There was no podcast I could listen to about it. There was no document. They're like, I had to do it. And so I went back to the exact spot that the snake bit me. And I took a step. And I kept taking steps until I went over the Rocky Mountains, across Colorado, across Navajo Nation, kept taking steps until I walked across Arizona, across Nevada, across California, across the Mojave Desert, across Los Angeles. I kept taking steps until the pavement turned into sand. And after 6 months and 3 days, 2,851 miles, I dove into the Pacific Ocean. And I was that person that I dreamt of becoming.
Mike, what did you learn most from this walk across America? What did you learn about maybe yourself and about humanity?
I learned that the potential that lies inside each human heart is like darn near infinite. You know, most of us create our future based on some version of the past. And like, I was doing that. You know, I was, hey, I'm a successful artist. I'm a successful songwriter. I make music inside of rooms with no windows. That's what I do. And I thought my future would be, you know, just some version of that going forward. You know, me a little older with a little more money, just doing that. I took this risk. I tried this project and I crushed it. And it got me thinking, well, what else can I do? And so I now see that my potential so far exceeded what I even thought was on the menu, you know, to order from life. I think that's true of every human being. You know, there's a few human beings that, you know, uncover their full potential. And I think most of us sell ourselves pretty far short. You know, we think like, I can't do this, or easy for that person to say, or like, no, you're capable of greatness. And most of the pain that a lot of us feel is knowing that deep down, we have more gifts to give than we are. And sometimes we can't figure out the right place or the avenue. That's your journey. You know, I believe that God gave you a heart to figure out what to do and a mind to figure out how to do it. But don't flip them. You know, don't use your mind to figure out what to do. It's a tool to help you figure out strategies and get things, but use your heart to figure out what to do.
Mike, off air, we talked about the impact that Dr. Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, had in your life. You had it handy. You talked about how, you know, you'd marked it up. What's one of the ideas? I don't mean for this all to be promotional for Franklin Covey at all. What's one of the ideas that Dr. Covey taught you or reminded you of that's been helpful for you?
I mean, there's so much stuff in there. And frankly, a lot of the principles have permeated the culture so much that I had encountered them before, but then realized this is where they came from. But, you know, this show is called On Leadership, correct? You know, one of the things I love.
Well, Mike. Technically, it's On Leadership with Scott Miller. I mean, at least get the title correct, okay? I mean.
Hey, listen, I told you earlier how much you mean to me, okay? The people know. You don't have to overdo it. Just play it cool.
Too late, my friend. Too late. You called me out.
So one of the things that stuck with me, you know, and the title of your show brought it to mind was the definition of leadership. Leadership is articulating another human's potential so clearly that they are inspired to see it themselves. And that gives me goosebumps, just repeating it. That stuck out. The time matrix between what's urgent and important, you know, that stuck out. Thinking win-win, that's helped me immensely in my life. You know, it's so full of wisdom that it's almost, it's there's a reason it sold 50 million copies and made it such an impact, because, you know, anytime someone reads this book, they're going to tell everyone about it. I've told my audience about it. I've told my friends about it. You know, a bunch of them are reading it now. And so it's just incredible. So there's a couple.
Thanks for indulging me. I'd love to end our conversation. What's next for you? What will people see potentially on the horizon? You've written a book of poetry. Have you thought of writing a book about your wisdom and your own journey? Are you producing more? What's next from Mike Posner?
Yeah, thank you for asking. I am writing a book right now that's just about the walk. And then, as you know, you start writing, it's kind of about everything. So I'm in the thick of that. I have no idea how long that will take me. I've made, I think, 12 or 13 albums, but this is my first, you know, full-length book, not of poetry. So I have no idea how long that will take me. I've also started the Mike Posner podcast, where I just share distinctions that have made a difference in my life. And I talk to people that inspire me to this day. And we take questions from the audience, sometimes just me, people dealing with real things, and try to give them distinctions to empower them to lead healthier and happier lives. So people can check out the Mike Posner podcast. And then I also have a new album coming. So doing a bunch of stuff, man. All of it's good.
Mike Posner, singer, songwriter, producer, poet, walker, survivor, podcaster, author, sage of the human experience. I mean, I love your concept of, you know, before you die, you want to live. And that really resonated with me. I think a lot of people will take enormous benefit in wisdom from listening to this episode. I think people will listen to it multiple times. Who knew Mike Posner was the new Stephen Covey? We appreciate you joining us today. Thanks for being on Leadership with Scott.
Hey,
Miller.
God bless you, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Mike. And we'll see you back here next week for a new conversation on leadership.